Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Hush, not child, and don't cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Just move on. Your destination, though you may find from time to time complication. Bite your lip and take.
Well, Tim, this is going to be the highlight of my day.
Is it because you're sitting across from me right now?
No.
No? What else happened?
Apparently the NHL's trade deadline was going on.
Oh, I slept through it.
Good for you.
Boring.
I was doing our live blog on the website.
Hopefully that was more entertaining than what I was doing.
There was nothing fucking going on.
No, unbelievable, eh?
It's tough. Brian Murray was killing us. All these trades that happened the day before the deadline.
Yeah, I just love personally sitting around and watching everyone chase their tails over who was the first to break, I don't know, like a Frederick Modin rumor or a Joey McDonald rumor.
And then there were some of the moves, like some guy named with the last name Rust was traded. I'm like, who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah, and Stastny was traded that wasn't Paul.
Yeah, who cares?
Who is that?
Yeah.
Jan Stastny?
There's a lot of hype. I felt bad for TSN because they had all these personalities in one room and the amount of fucking filler they had was incredible. I wish I could have seen what was on the cutting room floor.
You got to tell me about this Pekka segment. I just caught it on our Twitter now, but I want to know what happened in this. Did Mike Pekka?
Well, this morning, because you know the mornings are always slow on deadline day, right? Nothing ever, you know, nothing ever gets consummated until like the 12th hour kind of thing. But they filled this morning's time slot by discussing Mike Pekka's 2014 Olympic team for Team Canada.
Is Mike Pekka on it?
No. They broke down his team and dissected it.
Unbelievable.
Oh, this went on for like 10 minutes.
I'm surprised they didn't have more about Bob McKenzie's steep tea and coffee mishap in the morning.
There's another Pierre Maguire and Darren Dutchy.
One of those suspicious, something we'll look back on in a few years and say, well, that was an early warning sign.
He's too close. He's too close.
How close was too close? You and I are about a meter apart right now, and that's pretty comfortable for me.
Dutchy shoved Pierre. Let's just put it that way. You're too close, Pierre. Shove.
Was there a reason for this?
Nah, I think they were joking around, having a little play on last year's events.
That's not something you want to repeat. I don't know why you'd ever want to bring up those memories again.
But anyways, so the trade deadline happened. Obviously, Ottawa didn't make a move, as we know.
So many Bush League players, eh?
Yeah, it's just a bit, there wasn't a huge move made. I guess when Kovalchuk was moved, that was the biggest trade.
And Phaneuf.
Yeah, no, that's true too. But yeah, nothing really flashy happened today. Like Joe Corvo to Washington's doesn't do anything for me.
No, it was like a really high volume garage sale where you're just selling all the crappy old McDonald's toys you had when you were a kid, but you're still left with that microwave oven and the $50 price tag on it at the end of the day.
Yeah, I didn't even find the prices were that steep this year though.
No, a lot of really late picks, eh?
Yeah.
Kind of makes you wonder what the Senators could have got for, what's his face there, Andy Sutton. Had they held out an extra day?
Well, they said they had there was another offer. That was reported. I forget which website it was on yesterday, but there were two offers for Sutton. The Senators obviously had the best one, so it was something worse than a late second-round pick. So,
well, late, that could be the very last second-round pick.
Yeah, potentially. But I don't know. There's been some comparable defensemen moved today who, I don't know if Ottawa would have been better off to, like, not trade a late second round pick to grab a guy like a Derek Morris or an Aaron Ward. They're kind of shitty players.
Or Brian Poitier.
No, exactly. I don't think they're fucking difference makers, but I don't know. It's something to look at in retrospect, whether or not it would have been an
well, at the end of the day, I think with a guy like Ward, you're not really, you know, going to be telling your fan base that this is the difference maker in our team, that this is just the depth guy, right? These are, you know, moves you have to make if you want to be a cup contender.
No, but I guess the argument you can make to that is, isn't Andy Sutton a depth guy?
Well, I think on most teams, he's a depth guy. I think in Ottawa, he's a necessity at this point, even though now we've got...
Philip Kubo's out with an injury now, yeah.
Yeah, well, Karkner, you know, 2.0, and Karkner, we just, I don't know, took him from bingo, made him a defenseman.
And now he's a star.
And we didn't have to give up a second-round pick to get him.
No, that's true. But it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen with Sutton, who he's paired with.
So off the bat, I'm just going to ask you point blank, so everyone has it loud and clear. Yes or no, do you like the trade for Andy Sutton?
I have to see him play before. Like, I haven't seen Andy Sutton enough to, like, you know, I don't want to be vanilla on this podcast, but he's labeled as a big-bodied shot-blocking machine. And if you're 6'6", 240 pounds, you better be a shot-blocking machine if you're standing in front of the net on a penalty kill.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit pissed off right now because you just took the words out of my mouth. I really wanted a chance to evaluate this guy, watch him play in a few games. We'll be able to see him on Thursday and see what the guy's all about. Islanders fans have great praise for Andy Sutton.
I noticed that. It's like everybody these days glamorizes the fucking blocked shot. Like it's a lost art.
Well, a lot of people were saying that he was a better overall defender than Strait in Long Island this year. I don't know. Chalk that up to what you may. Maybe it's just some disillusional fans. We have a couple of those in Ottawa too, right?
People who'd Every fan base has some, yeah.
People who'd be crying bloody murder if Chris Campoli was traded.
I don't think so. Some people were asking why he wasn't traded. Same with Brian Lee today. But
because
I mean,
no one wants them?
No, they're going to get moved after the season's over. Guaranteed.
You got that crystal ball in your pocket? Or what else are you rubbing down there?
Well, they're not going to trade him at the deadline when all you're going to get is a draft pick. Like, that can wait till the end of the year. They're still under team control. Why make that move now? They're just depth fodder anyways.
Yeah, that's true. Well, don't tell the Ottawa Senators fan base that Brian Lee is just depth fodder.
So what are your thoughts? You haven't really said too much about Andy Sutton.
Well, surface value. I mean, the team got tougher. They always say that in the playoffs, you got to be tougher. Well, we did. We'll see what happens. We'll be in the playoffs. We'll be tougher. Who knows what's going to happen?
You know what I'm kind of worried about, though? Is people, or maybe not people, but this could be like one of those other Greg DeVries acquisitions, I guess you could say. Like a defensive defenseman who's brought in, doesn't really fit in real well. And then people like criticize it in retrospect. Kind of like Mike Commodore, actually.
Yeah, except DeVries' name always looked really weird on the back of his jersey with those lower cases and the upper cases.
Lower case and the upper case, yes.
I don't trust those names. Same with names that go down onto the arm of the person's jersey.
I just hope people hold them to a respectable standard.
For
don't
what
set
he
the bar
is.
Too high. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we'll hold him to the same standard we hold, what, a second-round pick?
Yeah. Maybe a Mockler second-round pick?
Yeah, okay, that's good. I can definitely handle that. One of the big things that I keep hearing about Andy Sutton without, to be honest with you, really ever noticing the guy play a game of hockey before in my life, blocks a lot of shots, apparently. Takes the body quite a bit.
Yeah, I think he's second in the league in block shots.
Yeah. What do you think about the block shots stat? I know you and I have been over this before, and that's one of the things that you use, at least, when you're trying to devalue Volchenkov.
A defensive defenseman, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like we mentioned earlier, like if you're that big and you're getting used all the time on the penalty kill, you're going to block some shots.
Of course, it's going to happen. If you're not blocking shots on the penalty kill, then you're not going to be penalty killing for very long, right?
Yeah.
Well,
the way that people are talking about Andy Sutton's block shot ability, though, this guy better be the second coming at Craig Ludwig.
Was that enough dead air for shock value there?
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I've been working on that. I read a little internet article about creating suspense on the air. written by Nick Kiprios.
You've been listening to Jim Rohn too often.
A.K.A. the Nick Kiprios blank stare of I don't know what words are.
We knew...
Is there anyone more brutal?
We should get Nick Kiprios in studios, but instead we'll have like a live camera shot and it's just a fucking cabbage on a stool.
I was going to say we should get him in the studio and put him in the corner and water him like a plant. Unbelievable. That boy, how on earth he got a job broadcasting beyond any other scrub who's ever been KO'd by Jeff Bookaboom. Why him?
Why Mike Pekka? Like Mike Peckett was in studios. They had Gary Roberts in studios. Oh, it's just weird how they bring in these old Mike like Peckett, veteran players. Like
Peckett just retired. He doesn't have anything else going on.
Yeah.
Of course he'll take whatever the $5,000 and the meal ticket to Wendy's to come on the TSN show, right?
Yeah, just wild. He's maybe, not very personable.
Maybe some Argos tickets too.
My favorite memory of Mike Peckett was Lance Pitt like hammering him in the playoffs, knocking him dizzy.
Why'd you like that so much?
I was a big Pitt lick guy.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. So the one thing that I'm looking at for Andy Sutton here is the guy's old.
Well, he's 34.
Yeah, he's
Kingston,
old.
Kingston guy. Sticking close to the local flavor on the team.
Are you insinuating that Kingston guys don't age the same as, I don't know, Valley guys or, I don't know?
No, it's just a comment. He's from Kingston.
Dutch Amish guys?
Don't fucking read too much into what I'm saying.
That's the point of this. It's radio. I got nothing else to go on.
But maybe, do you think... Looking at Sutton, maybe he's a guy that you could actually sign to a reasonable deal once his term's expired, provided he likes it here, obviously.
Well, from the sounds of it, already the guy's ecstatic to be here. I guess his first words to Brian Murray when he contacted him was, thank you for giving me this opportunity, you know, more or less paraphrasing it, which is fantastic. That's the kind of attitude you want.
I think everybody says that from Long Island, though.
Yeah, and we get a lot of Long Islanders in Ottawa, so...
At least Andy Sutton wasn't a healthy scratch, though.
No kidding. That was the brightest point of that trade.
And we didn't give up a first-round pick to get him.
Scrolling
back. And we didn't trade for Mike Connery this year.
And in the process of medical, though. Although Sutton's been okay this year, though, right?
Yeah, that's another knock on him, though.
Yeah, he's never played a full season, right?
He's had a lot of, I guess, ankle injuries, and I don't know if he's had a knee injury, but lower body injuries. Philip Kuba special.
Yeah, I think you read the same blog piece that I did on some Islanders blog. I forget the name of it.
Yeah.
Probably a pun.
Lighthouse though. Or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, whatever. They had the six myths about Andy Sutton.
Yeah.
And it was a great article. It's a good primer for anyone looking to understand what the Senators received back if you're into understanding hockey through reading about it as opposed to watching it, which we will get a chance to do tomorrow night.
In summary, he just sounds a lot like Matt Carkner. Like heavy shot, block shots, physical. Don't expect him to move too much in the defensive zone. He's going to be comfortable in front of the net, and he's not lazy. It's just he doesn't like to skate a lot.
Sure, yeah. I'm smart, too. I forgot to do my homework a lot. And now we have Andy Sutton, which to his credit, though, a lot of the Islanders fans were saying he's a far better skater than he's given credit for, and he's really...
Well, Brian Lee's supposed to be a good prospect still, too.
Yeah, so...
Everybody gravitates towards someone. You're always going to find a fan club.
Who evaluates?
Corey Clouston's sexy in those drinking and driving ads.
That's where we come in, Graham, though. Not the drinking and driving ads, because we don't do drinking and driving ads.
We don't condone that.
No one's ever asked us either.
No, that's true.
I still can't get over the Mr. Ottawa. Who's your pick for the hottest Ottawa Senator?
Hottest Ottawa Senator?
You know who mine is, right?
Sean Donovan.
Pascal Leclaire.
Oh!
Yeah, he's got that Euro look.
Oh, the Euro look.
Yeah, kind of like heroin junkie meets Tegan and Sarah. Like something out of an Irvin Welsh book. Definitely my pick. He's unique, right?
Yeah, he's just, like, I don't know, man. And you couldn't take Fisher, too. That was the other part of the contest.
Yeah, I know, because Brendan already had him in his pool.
Should ask Brendan who he voted for.
I like the person who voted for Big Country.
Big Country?
Yeah, because she likes guys who are hot and fight. That was her MO. I'll alert the entire Rideau townships.
She's probably from Winchester too.
No, I think she's a small town girl.
Getting back to the defenseman, Tim, Volchenkov didn't get dealt, obviously. Brian Murray, as Darren Dreger was reporting on TSN, apparently they're making some positive strides towards a new deal. I know you felt pretty strongly about if they don't trade Volchenkov, they better sure as hell sign him.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I was telling you last night when we were talking about this that if Volchenkov wasn't signed to an extension by 3 p.m. today, then he should be traded. Because, yeah, it's uncertain if the Senators are going to make the cup and if a guy like Volchenkov is going to make the difference. One thing that you can control that is in your own power here is the ability to recoup some of your investment on one of your assets, right? Even if it might not be full, it's still guaranteed. If Volchenkov really likes it that much, he'll just pull whoever and come sign back here again in the offseason if he was really that interested, and it would give Brian Murray some more time to weigh his options, right?
No, exactly.
That's what I think about Volchenkov. Now, when I got in the car with you today, I said to you, you know, he's not signed.
Obviously.
He's not traded.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? So Brian Murray better be damn well committed at this point to signing him up to the very last minute. And failing that, you got to flip the guy at the draft.
Well, it depends on the money terms, right? But if they're close, I think it's a situation where Brian Murray actually has to get an asset. If he can't sign him, flip his rights. But if he says he's going to try and sign him, he has to do it. He has to put his money where his mouth is. In the past few years, he's shat all over the John Montclair era for their inability to retain guys and let them walk at the end of their contracts. Guys like Redden, even though he sucked and had a no-trade clause.
Yep.
Zdeno Chara, another example. Even Martin Hadlett, to a lesser extent. Just let him go for nothing, essentially.
Well, the one thing I wonder about that is that going to hurt Murray's bargaining power if he holds on to, well, he has held on to A-Train this long.
Well, maybe he signs Sutton to a cheaper deal.
Is he all of a sudden going to say...
undercut him.
Yeah, what's $4.5 million when we were already going to give you four, right? I mean, those are easy overpayments to make, right? It's easy now. We got him. Is it worth it for $500,000 to lose the guy?
Well, that's all fine and dandy, but Ottawa already has a ton of players like that.
Yeah, I know.
You can label Mike Fisher as one of them. You can label Chris Neal as another. You could label Chris Kelly as another. Spezza, overpaid to a certain extent. You can make that argument with a number of guys, even guys like Chris Phillips or Kuba.
I think you'd have an easier time.
And LeClaire, for God's sake.
Easier time just naming guys on the Sens who have good contracts right now.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of them.
But I mean, I guess working in Brian Murray's favor is that he's actually demonstrated in the past that he can go out and get these guys dank contracts if they really want to be here. Guys like Chris Neal and Chris Kelly and Mike Fisher and the list goes on. Danny Healy.
It's still so weird for me to, yeah, it's still so weird for me to hear the fact that Brian Murray considers Chris Kelly a core player.
You know what? We've talked about the deadline a little bit. How about we go to some callers? I know you've been pimping the idea of getting some callers to like call in and get their ideas, opinions.
Do you want to know why?
Yeah.
I just wanted to hang up on people like the guys on the team do. Be like, nope.
Glenn Kelko, just argue.
You're so uneducated.
Just overtalk him, yeah.
You're so uneducated.
But how about we go to...
yell at old people at Lansdowne meetings.
How about...
And get my picture on the front
page
of the
paper. You're talking over me. But how about we take
Glenn
a couple
Kelka.
Calls? We'll take a couple calls, and then maybe we can discuss what some of the Eastern Conference contenders have done.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll be right back.
All right, so we're back, listeners. Sixth Sense first here. We have our first live caller who is not affiliated with the National Hockey League, the Internet, or the Ottawa Senators at all. We have caller number one, Francois, on the line with us right now. How are you doing today, Francois?
I'm doing well, and yourselves?
I'm doing well.
Not too bad, all things considered.
Thanks for calling.
Well, you know, I have nothing better to do with my time, so... you know, I figured I'd just chime in here on the trade deadline stuff.
All right. Lay it on us. What do you think?
Obviously, it seems like until the GMs really understand how to be able to manipulate the cap in the middle of the year, we're going to see sort of an NFL thing go on where, you know, the rosters are going to be pretty much set as the beginning of the year, and you're not going to see a whole lot of big moves mid-season. if you factor in the stuff that happened before the Olympic break, I mean, you know, Lou Lamoriello again continues to just build, you know, set himself up to go on these deep cup runs. Kovalchuk was really the only impact player available, and he gave up nothing for him. And people might argue, oh, well, Johnny Oduya, this and that, but, you know, what does he go out and do today? He gets Skula, who's sort of a comparable replacement, I guess. So, I mean, he didn't really give up anything for him.
You don't think Washington adding, like, Milan Giorgina, Joe Corvo, and Eric Belanger is going to
put
them over the cap?
Didn't they already have Milan Giorgina?
Yeah, they did. I think he was dealt in the Chris Clegg deal.
Is Joe Corvo really better than Brian Pothier? Like, I don't necessarily think so.
Offensively. Defensively, probably.
Like, yeah, but he can't hit the net on the power play. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. Like, Washington, actually, who did they bring in that was...
It was Giorgina, Eric Belanger, Scott Walker.
Yeah.
That's kind of okay, but I don't know. Like, what's Washington going to do? I mean, they're sitting at the top of the conference. Like, you know, they made a few depth moves. That's all well and good.
Nothing to push them over the top.
I kind of like what the Kings did. You know, they didn't really give up anything. They brought in Modine and Halpern, who, you know, give them a little bit of depth. They weren't really, unless they were going to get Kovalchuk, I mean, what are you really going to do? You know, you're going to end up overpaying for Ray Whitney. So I like what the Kings did. I think Phoenix made some decent moves, too. They did with Peter Mueller what Ottawa should have done with Brian Lee and what Montreal should have done with Carey Price was they determined Peter Mueller is not going to ever regain the form that they saw early on, so they cut him loose and they try and get the best return possible for him, which is Wolski, which is not bad.
No, that's a good point.
So, and I mean, you know, they brought in Schneider and Morris for not very much. So Phoenix made, like, some okay moves. Ottawa, you give up a second-round pick to ensure that Chris Campoli never sees the ice for the rest of the year, but Andy Sutton's not going to put you over the top. Matt Cullen's a nice player, but, I mean, presuming that there was a market with Chris Kelly, and I don't think that there necessarily is a market for Chris Kelly, I just don't see how you bring in Matt Cullen and you can't or you don't move Chris Kelly out the door. So, because there's an argument to be made there that at the money that Sean Donovan makes, he's a better skater than Kelly. Kelly is no longer what I would consider sort of a top pair penalty killer on this team. So, I mean, I really think that the one guy who's expendable, who they might have been able to get something back for, is Kelly. And, what are you going to do with Volchenkov? Because you can't pay a guy over $4 million or even over $4.5 million to block shots. Like, you can't do that. So, I mean, is Volchenkov going to stay for $4 million or $4.5 million, or is Murray going to have to trade him? Because I think Volchenkov, actually, if he's not going to stay for reasonable dollars, you could have got a decent return for him at the deadline. I mean, look at Washington. Even if you trade within the conference, like, Volchenkov is not a guy who's going to kill you in the playoffs if ever you come up against Washington, and they probably would have given up a decent return for him. Because I mean, they stink defensively, and he's exactly the type of guy they could have used. I guess we'll wait and see how it plays out, but I don't like the fact that we gave up 2 second-round picks. And, I mean, let's be honest. Unless you're getting sort of a top-10 first-round pick where you're getting almost a surefire blue-chipper unless he's Patrick Steffen, second-round picks are almost arguably just as valuable as late first-round picks because, you know, you get some steals in there that ultimately can end up helping your team. So, I mean, I don't know. I guess we don't have a second-round pick left now.
Nope, they're all gone.
In fairness,
did we have three or two before we traded for Sutton?
That was it. We had none.
It was San Jose.
Yeah, so we have
Ottawa,
no second-round picks left now, right?
No.
Yeah, so we're going to have a middle-round, first-round pick, no second-round picks. So, I mean,
they can always get those back before the draft, though. You might be able to flip a guy like Chris Kelly.
I guess they could. I like the Cullen deal, the Sutton trade.
Lukewarm.
I really don't think he makes the team better.
The only way
he makes the team better is that Campoli never sees the ice again, or at least so we think, right?
Well, I think the team, if you look at it, our power play hasn't really gotten any better. And
no.
I think if this team is going to make waves in the playoffs, that power play has to improve or they're toast.
Well, you win and lose games on special teams now.
No, exactly.
That's the way it is.
Especially when things get tight in the playoffs, right? And we're looking at 1-2 goal games and when the special teams are shitting the bed.
And you know what? The officials are, you know, they're not calling penalties as frequently as they were sort of like very soon after the lockout. So getting a power play is, you know, you're not really going to get 6 and 7 power plays a game like you used to maybe 2 seasons ago. So I mean, you really gotta be money when you get those chances.
Good points.
I think he's betting the farm on Erik Karlsson turning into like Scott Niedermayer within a year.
Yeah,
like, certainly seems that way.
Don't get me wrong; I think the guy is talented, but
it's a lot of pressure on a 19-year-old.
By not bringing in a guy like say a Schneider or a Derek Morris or anything like that, he's basically content to have Erik Karlsson be the predominant offensive defenseman on this team. Well, I'm not saying he doesn't have the tools to do it, but Christ, he's a 19-year-old kid?
Yeah, but maybe what they'll do is maybe they'll roll Karlsson for the full 2 minutes on a power play now.
Or maybe once Cullen gets familiar with the system, he could be another guy on the point. Or I mean, Alfredsson on the point.
I know.
Who knows?
Well, that's the thing. I mentioned this on the website the other day, but every time I think of having Cullen and Alfredsson on the point, I'm reminded of the Jason Pominville and that goal he scored against Emery.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be honest, the power play, Danny Heatley or no Danny Heatley, you know, the best power play we've ever had was when Alfredsson was under the point. I mean, forget the Pominville goal.
Yeah.
The power play's been shit ever since they've taken Alfredsson off the point. And then when they put him back on there, they never really give him enough time to, you know, to sort of, I guess, get his reps in, if you want to say that. But
so, yeah. Francois, do you really think, though, that a guy like Derek Morris, he brought back, what, a fourth-round pick?
Yeah.
It's like, he's a guy who could help the power play for the Senators, but is he going to help it that much? I mean, is that not something you should be targeting during the off season or very early in the season when you see a glaring deficiency in your team's play?
Yeah, I mean, like, Derek Morris, I don't know what to think about him. He's sort of one of those guys he's been traded a lot in the past couple of years. So you might wonder if he's a bit of a shithead too, right?
He's kind of in that like Wade Redden category, like Eric Brewer, Wade Redden, like those guys who had a lot of like
he's one of those guys
a
that
lot
just,
of sizzle.
For some reason, his name has carried a lot of value for way too many years.
A lot of sizzle.
I mean,
without the fizzle.
Would Derek Morris be a top four defenseman on this team? Absolutely.
Most would.
Boston get? I mean, the asking price, if Boston were to trade him directly to us, would have been more than a fourth-round pick.
Yeah,
a guy
like
Matt Schneider, on the other hand, that I think he would have been a better option than, say, Derek Morris, or that would have been a viable option. And what, Phoenix only gave up like a fourth-round pick for him or something like that, or seventh-round pick for him? They didn't really give up that much for him.
No, but he's old, and he's kind of shitty.
Oh, yeah. Anyways, guys, I gotta go.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Thanks for coming on the program, Francois.
All right. Bye.
We are back with caller number 2, Josh. Thanks for calling the Sixth Sense program.
Not a problem, my friend.
So, what are your immediate thoughts of the trade deadline?
Well, it was kind of an anticlimactic day, I guess, this year, given the Olympic break. I think a lot of the bigger moves happened before the break, and the sense of anticipation was kind of killed this year.
That Joe Corvo trade didn't do anything for you?
Well, it didn't exactly fire me up too much. I'm not a Kings fan, but, I think the Corvo trade I don't think it really helps Washington that much. Basically, they just got a poor man's Mike Green and didn't really accomplish much in that trade, in my view. I'm not afraid to face Joe Corvo in the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely not.
When he played for us, he scored one knuckle puck goal. Other than that, he didn't accomplish much on that finals run.
So who does scare you coming out of the trade deadline today, Josh?
Who does scare me? Well, I mean, I guess New Jersey's, of course, pretty intimidating. I think adding Kovalchuk is a big add for them. But to me, the biggest thing about facing New Jersey is facing Marty Brodeur. That's always a scary proposition. And then on the other side, I guess probably Pittsburgh plugged some holes. You got to be scared about facing Sid the Kid, Evgeny Malkin, Sergei Gonchar. Those are scary players to play against. They went to the finals last 2 years in a row and won it once. So I don't really want to face either of those teams. Luckily, they should stack up in the top half of the conference, and hopefully we can stick there too. I don't think Buffalo is significantly better with Rafi Torres. He's a valuable playoff player for sure. He's tough. He's physical. He scores goals. But Buffalo goes as far as Ryan Miller carries them. They have no defense of note. No defenseman of note, I think we should be able to beat them down the stretch and win the division.
No, I completely agree with you that a lot of teams didn't necessarily get any better. They just got deeper this year. I, again, agree with you that Kovalchuk was really the only difference-making acquisition this year, right? Like, I don't think Joe Corvo is going to be, scaring the odds makers into picking the Caps this year in every single playoff round. But that brings me to this question. Do you think that the Senators did enough this year?
I think you got to start by the you got to start that analysis from what should the Senators have done this year, and you have to kind of take a realistic barometer check of our shot in the playoffs this year, and I think we stack up pretty well. And I think the East is fairly wide open, and that's not to say that it's a soft conference. I just think there's a lot of parity there. I don't buy this Western BS that my friends here in Alberta and Vancouver sell, that the Northwest is so tough to play against the Western Conference. I don't buy any of that. But I do think the East is I think it's a lot flatter than the West. The West has some elite teams that are obviously better than the rest. The East, I don't think, really does. Pittsburgh and Washington, of course, are the cream of the crop, but there's not as big a gap between them and us as there is between, say, San Jose and Phoenix or San Jose and Colorado. So I think, what we really needed to achieve here in this for a lengthy run was somebody who could add a little offense from the back end and a gritty veteran like Matt Cullen. I really like the Matt Cullen acquisition up front. I don't think we overpaid for him, given that, let's face it, forwards were tough to come by at this trade deadline. And for that matter, so were defensemen. So I don't think we overpaid for Cullen. I really like him. I think he adds a lot to our group. Andy Sutton, probably not the best choice in terms of fit. He certainly addresses the need to have seven bodies that are capable of playing big minutes and big important minutes in the playoffs. But I don't think he's the best fit in terms of the type of player that we needed. We needed a guy that could play a little bit of a two-way game and move the puck up the ice and maybe even help us out on the power play, where we've been better of late, but we still aren't very good. For what it is, Andy, we didn't overpay for him, I don't think, given the way the market was this year. But I'm not enthralled with the Andy Sutton acquisition.
Are you a bit disappointed that maybe other five or six depth defensemen, what Andy Sutton's been labeled as, maybe went for less than what we paid?
Yeah, there was really two guys or three guys that kind of fit the bill better than Sutton. That would be Leopold, Seidenberg, and Morris. But I'm not convinced any of them are better defensemen than Sutton. I think Derek Morris has been on the slide for three or four seasons now. Jordan Leopold, same story. I mean, he since he got traded out of Calgary, the guy's not been very good. Seidenberg, Boston gave up a lot to get Seidenberg. So I think he went for more than Sutton did. He went for the second, and Byron Bitts, good Saskatchewan boy. I think of those defensemen, I think we got the best one, but probably not the best fit. And unlike previous seasons when we've gone out and acquired guys like Mike Commodore, we're acquiring a guy this year that is playing the best hockey he has in his entire career. When we went out and got Mike Commodore, he was on a big downhill slide, and you know, he came with some question marks. Sutton doesn't have those question marks so much, maybe around injury a little bit, but he's playing very well this year.
Yeah, I don't have that like that John Muckler sense that I always do at the deadline where, you know, you bring in a guy like an Arneson or a Saprykin and you're like, oh, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, his name just sounds different,
well,
doesn't it?
I did get that impression a little bit with Sutton. It was just like, this was a move that we needed a warm body and we just did it for the sake of doing it.
Well, Murray kind of said that too, yeah.
And I think that's maybe a little bit true with Sutton. I mean, we could have maybe gotten Lukowicz, who plays a similar style game and hasn't been as bad as Canucks fans will have you believe. He was free. I mean, he was waived yesterday, and we'd have to pay him less, too, if Eugene Melnyk cares at all. But I did get that sense a little bit with Sutton that this was just a move for the sake of making a move. But I do really like the Matt Cullen ad. I think that adds a lot to our roster. We have a lot of warm bodies now, but, you know, we've got some RFAs and a UFA or two coming up this offseason. We can address that later. But I do like our offensive, our forward core going forward. I think we've got eight or nine players that you really have to be worried about. And I think that's tough to coach against and to design systems to play against, because that's just a lot of depth.
Yeah, and I don't think that Olympic break helped Matt Cullen's case either, a little two-week hiatus.
I don't think that two-week hiatus helped anybody on our team.
No, it didn't look like it the other night.
Yeah, even the guys that played, I don't think it helped too much. Maybe Jarkko Ruutu will be a little bit energized. But, you know, I honestly even just listened to talk to Ian Mendes yesterday during the intermission. He sounded just exhausted. He didn't sound excited. He sounded like he was worn out. So I think the Olympic break really hurt us this year. But that's the Olympics. It's a crapshoot. I mean, we got to go. The NHL's got to go. There's no two ways about it. So everyone's got to deal with it. You know, what else can we do? I mean, everyone's got that same rust. We just got to be better at shaking it off.
Absolutely, and hopefully the Senators won't have to shake off too much going into the playoffs. What do you think the Senators can do with this team as it stands right now, finishing up the season and going into the playoffs? Are we going to struggle? Are we going to succeed? What's going to go on?
Well, I think we've got 18 games left now to the playoffs, I think really we're going to go as far as our goaltending goes this year. If Brian Elliott plays like he did last night, which he wasn't actually that bad, but we won't get very far. You can't have those kind of deflating goals in the playoffs. And well, Pascal Leclerc played well for a period, but who knows? I think that's kind of going to kind of be our Achilles heel this year. I like our forwards. I like our defense for the most part. And like I said, we could be a little bit more mobile. But I think in the playoffs, when you've got guys like Matt Carpner, Philip Kuba, who's not overly physical, but and then Andy Sutton. These are big, big guys. Chris Phillips, Anton Volchenkov. Those are tough guys to play against. You don't want to be the first to the puck when you know you're going to get your arm broken when one of those big gorillas is coming down on you. And so I do like that about our squad. And the other thing with Sutton is he blocks a lot of shots. So with Anton and Andy blocking shots for us, maybe it covers up some of the weaknesses that we have in net.
Blocking shots is the theme of the podcast tonight. But Tim and I just want to thank you for coming on, Josh. We really appreciate it. We hope to have you back on the program in the future.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for reading.
Take care, Graham.
Take care, man.
All right, bye.
Oh,
All right, and now we have Sean from London, Ontario on the phone with us. Sean, how are you doing today?
Very good, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm still a little sleepy after today.
No kidding. What a boring deadline, eh?
Yeah, did you manage to catch any Z's during the trade deadline, or did you pay attention?
I was paying attention. I was actually following along with the rest of the 6-10 crew this afternoon, and, very disappointed, to say the least. It seems like the real trades again start flowing in after the deadline, like Edmonton, Calgary, who really would have thought those two rivals would be switching Steve Staios, but hey, that's what the new cap's doing, right?
How would you like to be a fan of one of those teams right now? Jesus Christ.
Calgary's switched over their whole roster pretty much, save for a few guys, in a couple months. Edmonton's just been one giant cluster of a mess.
Yeah, they're going to have to really reevaluate that whole City of Champions nickname they've given themselves.
Well, and to be honest, that is very true. I think they kind of got ahead of themselves when they went to the Stanley Cup Finals there as the number 8 seed, and it seems like, they got in their head that the team is great. They just need a little bit of tooling here, and clearly not the case.
I'm glad you said that, because Ottawa's kind of like the same way right now. Do you think they're playing a little bit over their heads? Like, how would you evaluate their moves right now?
Right now, well, first off, the moves this year I thought were the best Murray could do with what we have asset-wise. I mean, we're finally getting over Muckler, drafts and his trades just decimating our junior system, not really paying attention there. And now I find that we're finally starting. Murray's a great drafter. We're starting to get some people back into the system. We didn't give up anything out of our system. That's great. Draft this year, from what I understand and what I've seen, not great, not horrible. So, I mean, second rounders we gave up, not too much of a loss. I think we did the best we could with what we have. We didn't mortgage our future, but we also didn't go for gold either. I think the way I see our team this year is we are the Montreal Canadiens of a couple of years ago when we played way better than we really should have for our team. I think the true test will be next year to see how we do.
Well, as long as it doesn't result in any overly inflated contracts, a la the ones that were doled out by Murray after the Cup Final, then we should be okay.
No, you know what, and that's where I'm scared with Anton right now because...
Amen.
Murray constantly says, we can't give away assets and let them walk away for nothing. But on the other hand, Anton's people have been talking about term. Well, if it's more about term, a little scared on that because of the injuries this year and the way he plays forthcoming, all the injuries that may or may not happen.
So going into the 3 o'clock deadline, were you one of the people out there who said, well, if Murray doesn't have Volchenkov signed to a deal by 3, then he should be immediately flipped? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I understand their concern. We don't want to walk into what Florida did last year. I mean, I believe Sexton said last week when you guys were speaking with him, if things were different, he may have actually moved Bouwmeester before the deadline. Are we in that position? Possibly, but I don't think we can either. We can't give up Anton Volchenkov right now, whether we can afford to or not. We can't have him walk with the role that we are on in right now. I mean, we're third in the Eastern Conference. I don't think anybody saw that coming, if at all.
Just Eugene.
Yeah, of course, Eugene sees all, right? He's a great business vision leader of Canada. Boston, Ontario, but he likes to toot his own horn and drink his own drink. That's fine. He's been wonderful for centers. I won't complain about him too much, but... yeah, we can't afford to have them just walk away for nothing. But on the other hand, we can't have Anton Volchenkov take off because, Andy Sutton, I'm sure he's going to be a great addition to a certain degree, but he's not going to be replacing Volchenkov anytime soon.
I'll just throw this out here right now. Do any of us here think that Melnyk would have given Murray the green light to trade Volchenkov after all the song and dance he did about this team being a real contender? Can you go ahead and trade a guy like Volchenkov and still continue on believing that you're a contender?
I think you can if you have the right pieces in place to replace Volchenkov. Now, from the names I saw being bantied about from whether it was sports networks, local newspapers, you're not seeing too many wonderful names being thrown out there. Cabrillet didn't even really come into play until later in the afternoon, and then we find out, you know, he listed three teams that he would go to and basically said, you know, if I can go to one of these three teams and they can do something, I'll go there. So, I mean, you can't really count him as being available. So I really don't see any replacements out there for him, so I don't see Gene giving him that green light to go ahead. I don't know what you guys think about that, but...
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, you could flip that guy, but you have to get something legitimate back that can help you now and not kill you in the future.
I'm wondering if Andy Sutton was that guy.
Seeing how our Islanders trades have worked out in the past, I mean, we're kind of, one for one so far. We got Campoli, who I don't think been what everyone thought he was going to be. And then, but I mean...
Oh, he's everything I thought he'd be.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have, then we fleeced Milbury not too long, or several years ago. So I mean, it's kind of hit and miss when you're dealing with the Islanders. But
yeah, but everyone was fleecing Milbury at that time. It was like Coke in the '80s. Everyone was doing it.
Talking heads on TV. You know, he's not going to light the NHL on fire, but he'll be steady back there. He's hard to play against. Sorry, I think Jason Smith without the injuries is what I'm looking at.
Sorry, I just want to clarify my previous remark there that I don't think Andy Sutton is a long-term replacement for Volchenkov. I just meant for the rest of this year, potentially.
Oh no, yeah, he's definitely not the rest of the year. Surprisingly, Andy Sutton has a lot more block shots and a lot more...
Hits
than I thought he would or did, but I mean, I don't watch every Islanders game either.
Oh, I don't blame you for that.
No, I don't.
I won't hold that against you, man.
Yeah, exactly.
But Tim and I were talking a bit before we started taking calls from the readers, and we were just kind of like talking about rivals and other competitors in the East. Is there a team that stands out for you who made a move today that you're like, oh shit, we have to worry about those guys?
You know, surprisingly, not. Washington, they've been walking all over the Eastern Conference, and I don't think that's going to really change between now and the end of the season. I think what they surprised me with was that they didn't touch their goaltending, and that was my big surprise all day. Was Capitals didn't address their goaltending, Flyers didn't address their goaltending, and
Chicago.
Yeah,
Chicago didn't.
Chicago didn't. Thank you. Yeah, there wasn't any addressed goaltending issues. So with the Eastern Conference, I still think it's pretty much can be a crapshoot whether you make it out to the finals or not, because Theodore and Varlamov really aren't, I think, legitimate number ones, either of them. Boston didn't do much. I think they actually took away a bit from what they did and what they were doing. You look at Buffalo adding Rafi Torres. I keep hearing game changer, but as someone who used to watch a lot of Edmonton games when he was with Edmonton, and catches the occasional Columbus game, I really don't see the game changer tag on that guy.
Isn't he like slightly like a Chris Neal with more, I don't know, more goal scoring ability?
Yeah, picture Chris Neal circa 18 goal year.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what he's been. So, I mean, for Buffalo to give away Paige and MacArthur, I think they've actually subtracted this this deadline. So, I mean, in Montreal, they, D'Agostini last night, which is no big,
well, that's huge.
Big impact on their lineup. So. I mean, really, our division, I think we are still just as much able to win it as we have been since the start of the season. Rest of the Eastern Conference, not too much. Pittsburgh, you know, a couple of smart moves. Is it going to change the fact that they're a tired team who's been to the Stanley Cup Finals last 2 years in a row? I personally don't see it. I think they are exhausted, especially with the amount of players they had going to the Olympics as well.
Yeah, Malkin doesn't look the same.
No, he doesn't. And, I mean, I'm sure even Crosby last night, he looked good, but you could tell he was tired, and you could tell he was kind of almost a little too cocky with how he was, especially after his little chirp fest there with,
Yeah, I saw that with Rive.
Yeah, with Rive. I would love to hear what he said to Rive, but...
Well, I imagine it was pretty bland.
Yeah, exactly.
Bland, corporate... Too much hair gel and a hell of a finishing move.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, Sean, to make another finishing move, we're going to keep going here, and we thank you very much for your phone call tonight.
Hopefully we'll talk to you in the future.
Exactly. Enjoy the rest of the show, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, take care,
guys. Take care, man.
Yep. Bye.
Later. All right, listeners, free from the confines of the tuna fish can, we had him in last time he was on the episode. Six Sense favorite, Danny Heatley, Speedwagon. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I am good.
How'd the trade deadline treat you?
Pretty good. An exciting day of avoiding work once again.
Excellent. I was hoping for more of a long-winded and angry response.
What are your impressions?
Well, being a Sens fan for so long now, I've come to not expect anything to happen. But Brian Murray was active just before the Olympic break, so Matt Cullen is a reasonable trade, I guess I would say, compared to, I don't know, trade deadlines past, Oleg Saprykin or Tyler Arneson. I guess Matt Cullen would probably be graded an A in comparison. So
yeah, he's got a little bit better pedigree, doesn't he?
Is there even a pedigree for half the guys this team has picked up at the deadline before?
We've been conditioned for shit, haven't we?
We have.
That was a perfect lineup for a horse meat joke.
Speaking of being conditioned for shit, being a Senators fan, when Team Canada blew the 2-goal lead, were you like, that's it, it's over, give the goal to the U.S.?
I'm just like, in my head, I'm thinking, fuck you, Ken Hitchcock, for playing, you know, just going in that defensive shell. I can't stand that stuff.
Yeah, yep. I've been conditioned to just prepare for the worst when something like that happens.
So is there anything more interesting to anyone else here than watching Bob McKenzie rip anonymous hockey rumor mongers on Twitter throughout the course of the day?
No, that's pretty fun. I think he exercises a lot of restraint, actually. There was one point today, well, okay, I guess this isn't ripping the bloggers, but I'm surprised he didn't have more to say about the Vesa Toskala going to Calgary, whereas Elliot Friedman went the other way and asked if Calgary has had all the Leaf games blacked out all year. That's probably the best reaction I've heard all day on Twitter.
Yeah, I was just privy to Bob McKenzie's Twittering, I don't know, I guess, mini-war with anonymous man by the name of Dallas Dave, who had a rumor about an Islanders goaltender being traded, and Bob was very quick to jump down his throat and insist that people have to be careful with their reporting of these rumors. Do you think that these things are dangerous, Danny? Do you think that these things are a bad idea for the media and for fans at this time of year?
Do I think the rumors are dangerous?
The Twitter.
Oh, the Twitter. Well,
or the Twitter rumor.
I don't think rumors are dangerous, per se. I don't think any of it's dangerous. I think you just have to consider your source. I think people like that are who people in the mainstream media will point to when they want to knock blogging or Twitter, the social media down a peg. They'll point to these anonymous people who might refer to themselves as an insider or having sources who do nothing but rumor monger all day. I mean, Eklund admits he's a rumor monger and he reports rumors, but I don't see how is there any benefit in that to people to just go out there and literally say, I heard that this is going to happen. We all know how many times his prognostications come true. I don't think it's dangerous. I just think for every step forward you have with a good blogger, you have people like that who everyone else points to and says, see, bloggers are bad.
But we can get a lot of enjoyment out of making fun of Eklund.
I think I might get some of the most enjoyment out of making fun of Eklund.
Yeah. So at least he's contributing positively.
That's true.
Isn't his accuracy rate like 3-point-something%?
Oh, I have no idea. Today, I mean, he just throws out statements even. He threw out one today saying how if a team picks up a rental player at the deadline, they're more than likely to sign him. And I just tweeted back, I'm like, really? Doug Waite, Carolina, Ryan Smith, New York Islanders, Marian Hossa, Pittsburgh Penguins, Keith Tkachuk, Atlanta Thrashers.
You can't get into facts with Eklund. Come on.
You know, part of me wishes that he would just say something back, probably because I'm waiting to pounce on him. But then someone said to me one day, they go, well, you know what, he'll never do that because he thinks he has some kind of standard to live up to, and he wouldn't want to ruin whatever credibility he has with the 20,000 or so people who follow him. But I'm always amazed when I go on Twitter and I see people at tweeting him and saying, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? Like, is this their first day with the computer? I mean, there's
just
100
maybe
other people out there you could ask serious questions about.
But he's the only one who will respond.
Yeah, and then he pushes his website and the promotion, and now he's got some phone thing where he put his phone number out there. And I guess
weird.
My understanding is it's something I don't know, an audio version of his tweets, but you call up and listen to them. And
sounds awesome. We should actually call that number right now.
you know, he put it out there, and the number of jokes I made in the following day or two.
We should get that number from you, and then we'll call him on our next podcast.
It's just recording.
Well, I got you on here. I could look for it.
Oh, it's all right. Don't worry about it. We'll get your... what do you think about the moves that Ottawa's made with Matt Cullen and Andy Sutton?
Matt Cullen, looking at the stat sheet, I guess I like it somewhat. Didn't have to give up a lot for him.
Don't sound too happy.
I mean, I don't think he's an impact player or anything, but believe me, I'm not sad to see Alex Pickard go. We have Chris Campoli, and I think he does the same thing.
That was the best part
of the
game.
I don't think anyone's going to ever have anything great to say about either of them, unless one day one of them finds the corner of the rink.
The circular
Andy Sutton,
rink.
I don't understand. Like, he's an NHL veteran. Is he supposed to be an upgrade over Matt Carkner, maybe? Pylon last night.
Yeah, he looked like a turnstile. I think that's what has a lot of people kind of wondering where the hell he kind of fits in on the defense pairings, because as of practice today, he was paired with Matt Carkner. And sure, they're big.
What's better than one Matt Carkner?
They might block a lot of pucks, but I don't know. Not a lot of mobility.
I just don't see where he's an upgrade in any way. Like I said, I don't see what he's bringing. He's maybe defensively better than Matt Carkner, possibly. I don't know. Or he can at least win a fight. Maybe they're tired of sending Matt Carkner out there every time we play the Leafs and they have them coming up again on Saturday.
There was a sweet video of Andy Sutton killing Darcy Tucker on YouTube.
Is that from his days in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that quite well, actually.
Very dirty. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I'm a sucker for dirty hits on YouTube.
Especially I'm a sucker for anybody hitting Darcy Tucker.
Yeah, I was just about to say, anytime Darcy Tucker gets hit, rammed into the boards, I enjoy it. Anyways.
I'm just stunned at your facial expression right now.
Just this glazed smile, yeah.
You did that with a hint of... hedonism almost.
Oh yeah, thanks Tim, you fucking asshole. But is there a team in the Eastern Conference that has you a bit concerned as the playoffs get closer?
Pittsburgh. I think I've mentioned before, are we still in third currently?
Yeah, I think by a point.
Okay, so we're still sitting in third, and I think it took a monumental effort to get there, but I think now that they're there, they can't take their foot off the gas pedal for the rest of the way, because I think if you don't win our division, it's the kiss of death. Whether you're the fourth spot or the fifth spot, you're going to be playing probably Pittsburgh or New Jersey. And I think Pittsburgh is just coasting until they get to the playoffs. I think they know what it takes to lose. They know what it takes to win. So they're just biding their time until the playoffs start, and then they're going to kick it in overdrive.
Are you concerned about Washington at all?
Yes and no. I think we could beat Washington in a seven-game series. I mean, looking at Ovechkin and Crosby, they've faced each other head-to-head, what, three times now?
Yep.
The Olympics, World Juniors, and last year in the playoffs. And Ovechkin's never won. I mean, on paper, or even looking at them, people probably say, you know, Ovechkin's a more talented guy, or he can do more things that amaze people, but Crosby seems to be more well-rounded. I mean, Ovechkin needs to learn that he can't take a two-minute shift in an important game. He needs his entire team to help him to win. And I think Washington still has a question mark in goal. Varlamov's been great, but he's been injured, and for whatever reason, Bruce Boudreau doesn't trust him and continues to roll out Jose Theodore even when Varlamov is healthy.
To everyone's benefit. I don't mind that at all.
It's okay, though. They have Corvo now.
They have Corvo, yeah, that's right.
Corvo's going to solve all the problems. Uh-oh's right, yeah.
Let's hope he does better in that capital city.
Yeah, they didn't address any of their needs, eh? Like goaltending or like a defensive defenseman who can shut people down. Like Giorgino.
I think Bruce Boudreau really is, I'm not sure why, confident in Jose Theodore, or I don't know.
There's
been times when Varlamov's been healthy this year and he hasn't gone to him. There was back-to-back nights and he went to the third-string guy instead of going to Varlamov when he was healthy. I don't understand.
They remind me a lot of Ottawa back from like 06, 07. Just like, you know, like they'll try and beat teams like 6-5.
I feel like Ottawa had better pieces, more diverse pieces than Washington.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
More defensive. Yeah, like a better
Ottawa
defensive
had
stuff,
better
but,
defensive defensemen back then.
But, yeah, just similar. Try and run and gun. Try and beat you that way.
I think you look at Washington as the team to beat in the East, obviously, but I personally believe that there are far more scary teams to face in the playoffs. Like, I wouldn't want to be getting close to the Philadelphia Flyers, for example.
Oh, they didn't upgrade their goaltending, though. Michael Layton doesn't scare me.
I would say that top of the heap is Pittsburgh for me, and then probably Jersey, Washington. I'd be happy if they played any one of the teams that are sitting around the bottom now. Montreal, Philadelphia, Florida, Atlanta.
Buffalo, yeah.
Buffalo. I mean, I wouldn't like to play Philadelphia. They're a team that could sneak in. They just had, you know, they had a bad run of luck with injuries, and they're a team that probably will get in. They're not going to sneak in. They will get in, and they can do damage. So I would want to avoid them, but I still think Ottawa could beat them. But, like I said, Pittsburgh is the first team I would want to play, then Jersey, Washington. After that, no one in the East scares me significantly in a seven-game series. Then again, maybe I'm blinded by that marvelous winning streak they had there going into the break, which seems like it was a month ago now.
Do you think that the Sens overpaid for Sutton or for Cullen? Does not having any second-round picks in this year's draft scare you at all?
I think any time you can trade a pick for a bona fide NHLer, I'm not that upset. I mean, who's to say that second-round pick is going to turn out to be anything? I think after the first round, you know, statistics have shown it's a significant drop-off in guys who make the NHL. I honestly don't know a lot about draft science, you know, percentage of guys out there right now. I couldn't tell you a lot of guys out there who are second-rounders. You can remember the first-rounders, that's all I know.
And Darren Dreger came out this afternoon, and he said Ottawa was making strides with Anton Volchankov. What do you think's fair value? What do you want to see happen? If you can't get him under contract, are you going to be upset that they didn't trade him at the deadline? What are your thoughts on Anton Volchankov right now?
I think if Brian Murray thinks they have a legitimate shot at contending this year, which, you know, at the beginning of the year, no one thought was possible, and then with where they are now, people think, you know, they're not just a playoff team. They might have a chance to do something. And I think they had to keep him. But I wouldn't want to see him go. But with his agent's reputation, Jay Grossman, who represented Kovalchuk, people seem to think it's a foregone conclusion he'll test the open market. I'd like to hope he might take some kind of discount, but I think I've heard his market is probably pegged around a Komisarek for, would that be $4 or $5 million a year?
Oh, shit, that scares me.
Yeah, I don't know if Ottawa could afford that.
I don't know a Leafs fan who looks at Komisarek's money and says that's good value.
Yeah, that's bang for our buck right there. What he does when he's on the ice, when he's not injured, that's good. Volchankov? I don't know, maybe he's cut from the same cloth a little bit, right?
Then again, I mean, you know, if they were to do their homework, you know, it'd probably be a year adjustment period for people to get over the fact that Volchenkov's gone, but, you know, there's got to be another guy out there they can find at a decent price who can block pucks. He won't be the same. You know, he won't be Volchenkov, but...
And that's what the cap's all about, right? At the end of the day, if you can't afford the guy who does, you know, task A or task B for you, you go out and you find a guy...
There's not too many teams who've been hurt by the cap, I would say, as much as the Senators. Going into the lockout, they had a lot of talent that was due for a lot of money.
That's what Bruce Firestone said in their first podcast as well. He thinks the cap killed Ottawa.
We've been punished from day one.
Well, John Muckler fucking helped, but...
We're still paying for it.
But, I mean, they had Marian Hossa, they had Martin Havla, they had Wade Redden, they had Zdeno Chara.
Alfie, you know, Spezza.
Spezza, they picked up Heatley coming out. They had too many names and not enough money to go around. And then you have role players like Mike Fisher, and they threw, I think, above market at him, you know, whether or not they needed to. And there's just not enough money to go around.
Well, Matt Stajan coming in at 3.5 recently makes Fisher look pretty good at where he's at, considering the years he's had, too.
That would be true.
But then again, last year, the Fisher contract, I, among many, was ready to throw him over a fence somewhere to a different county.
No, he had a horrible year last year. And he's bounced back, but I was going to say he's been cold lately, but... He hasn't played for 2 weeks. It'll be interesting to see how he responds, how everyone responds coming out of the break here. Like I said, last night's 4-1 hiccup, but see if they can bounce back. Like I said, they have the Leafs on Saturday. I'm assuming they play tomorrow. I don't even know the schedule. It's not in the top of my head.
They play Carolina tomorrow.
Oh, okay, so there you go. So hopefully that'll turn things around.
You'd hope so.
Yes.
Yeah, you really would.
So you have any closing thoughts before we let you go?
I just found that number, if you'd like.
Oh, dirty, yeah. That'd be great.
You can say it on
air. You know what? Yeah, say it on air. This is Eklund's phone number for anyone who wants to call him.
Well, for anyone interested, this is a number that Eklund threw out on Twitter a couple of weeks ago that said you can call him and talk about trades or whatever's on the top of your head. I don't know what happens if you call it. I swear I have not called it.
We should ask him about Julie Robenheimer's caloric intake. I'm sure it's
215.
Got it.
240-7792.
Perfect.
That $10.
Ask for Dwayne.
That calling card's looking pretty good right about now, Graham.
You want to try it?
Yeah, absolutely. If we're doing a deadline show, then we have to call the deadline master himself.
All right, let's call him. We'll go straight to the source.
Like I said, I don't know if he picks up, but that's a number he threw out there.
All right, we'll try. Oh, you know what? Even his voicemail would be kind of funny.
Come on, we're industry guys now.
Oh, yeah, we're industry guys. We're insiders.
We can talk
put me on
them.
A list on Twitter. You know how they have the list function now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was put on someone's list under media.
Awesome.
That's the loosest definition of media I've ever heard.
Julie Robenheimer's probably on that list too then. Oh, good stuff. Danny Healy, Speedwagon, thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Always a pleasure.
Hopefully we'll talk to you in the near future.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah, you too, man. Take care.
All right.
Later.
Ciao.
Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, me too. Nice to hear that our readers aren't three-headed weirdos.
Yeah. No, I was happy. Those are some great responses. Hopefully that encourages some more participation on the website and on the podcast. If people want to call in to a future podcast, float us an email.
I told you you'd like it.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I've been pushing this for weeks.
Yeah.
And we finally did it.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out so bad.
Yeah, no. Kudos to you for pushing the envelope a bit.
It's a shame we couldn't get to everyone who emailed us this week.
But, yeah, just because of time constraints, Tim and I had to cut it a little bit short. But hopefully we can get to you in a few weeks. But, yeah, what are your thoughts on the Eastern Conference heading forward? I know we were supposed to talk about this.
Oh, geez, what are we talking about? Teams to beat in the East in the playoffs, where the Sens are going to finish? What are we looking for here?
Well, you've seen what the other teams have done. What are your thoughts for how the Senators can fare moving forward? Is there can Ottawa, like Eugene Melnyk says, make a splash?
Well, I'm wondering at this point if Ottawa's already peaked and what we've seen from the Senators is as good as it gets. And I know if the team had played like this the whole way through the season, then we would be in first place right now, or at least very close to it, right? So I think that the team could probably comfortably finish in third place this year. And I think it would be a disappointment on the year if we didn't go at least two rounds in the playoffs. I, for one, will actually be pretty upset if we don't go conference finals. I'll be even more upset if Volchenkov leaves us.
Yeah, that's a huge concern going forward. But like Darren Dreger mentioned earlier today, they're taking positive steps. I guess that's something to build upon. Hopefully they don't overpay too badly if they do sign him.
Yep, and news from Darren Dreger is a whole lot better than bad news from, what's-his-face there? Evil agent.
Well, at least you can believe it.
Jay Grossman,
yeah.
Do you think him and McAlpine and what's the other guy's name? Barry.
Evil geniuses.
Do you think they're like the trifecta of evil? In the agent world?
It's not like baseball where you hear of like an agent like Scott Boras where it's like, or that Drew Rosenhaus from the NFL where it's like, oh fuck, that guy's put on a pedestal and that's, you know, you don't want to have to deal with that agent where you avoid his clients, right?
Yeah.
But there's not too much of that in hockey, I find.
No, it's because there's not enough money in it.
Well, that's not true, but...
Well, there's enough, but, I mean, baseball.
Oh, absolutely.
NFL endorsements.
Yeah, oh, that's a good point. But different. I don't know if it's different hockey subculture or what's going on, but...
Anyways, I'm sure we can save more breaths for Mr. Grossman should he do anything that would, I don't know, displease us or advise his client to do something that would displease us.
Hopefully we don't have a summer like last summer. Let's just put it like that.
We can have a show about him.
Maybe he'll come on the show. All right.
Let me return the favor here.
Yeah, sure.
Where did the Sens finish?
Where did the Sens finish? Buffalo's right there, right? They're only a point back. Ryan Miller's playing well coming out of the Olympic break. They made a move to get Rafi Torres. I think Buffalo is a team that might be able to pass us if we don't get good goaltending and good defense going forward. I know Ottawa has some injuries on the blue line. Whether or not Ottawa can maintain the momentum that they had before the Olympic break is something to look at. And it kind of has me a bit concerned as the playoffs draw near, because you not only did they have to start playing well again, but they also have to break in two new players who are acquired to make a difference in the playoffs. And I hopefully this isn't another Corey Stillman, Mike Commodore kind of thing moving forward.
Yeah, you don't want things to get moving too fast and everything to get jumbled, and then next thing you know, you're swept in the first round.
No, exactly. But I think one thing Ottawa has going for it down the stretch is that their schedule is a bit soft as opposed to the way it was before the Olympic break. So hopefully they can build upon that, get some quick, easy wins, and then build some confidence heading into the postseason.
Hate to make this prediction. Hate to make any predictions whatsoever.
Right.
But I think the fact that this team works so hard, I don't want to say that they have a blue-collar ethic, because they're far too talented to ever receive a tagline like that. But I think that might prevent them from really, you know, slacking and getting into a lull.
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
And Corey Clouston just has the whip on those boys,
no,
too, right?
That's a great point, yeah.
I mean, the little general, did you see how pissed off he looked last night?
Yeah. Well, like, he had every right to be. They hung Brian Elliott out to dry.
Yeah.
That third goal notwithstanding, but yeah.
I saw Brian Lee make a, well, I don't know, we don't really name names here, but I saw a defenseman on the Senators make a poor pass that resulted in an icing call, and the camera panned immediately to Clouston. Clouston looked like someone stolen his favorite Spider-Man pajamas or something. Was just ready to flip, grinding his teeth down to nothing. So I don't know how we really judge this year's trade deadline. It's gets kind of difficult to judge these things as the years go on, and you realize that you know, only one team is going to come out of this being the true winner. People, all the pundits, can grade the actions or inactions of every NHL club today, but at the end of the day, Stanley Cup, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think what some of our readers said was a great point. The success rate of second round picks isn't necessarily that high. So if you're getting two proven commodities like Sutton and Cullen, that's not necessarily a bad thing right now. And in all fairness to Alex Pickard, that guy's not going to kick us in the ass anytime soon.
And let's be honest here. Right now, going into the playoffs, the Senators need, okay, we can argue a little bit more about Sutton later, but certainly Matt Cullen. We need a guy like Matt Cullen a lot more than we need a second-round pick at this point, right?
Yeah, it's tough to get a read on Brian Murray sometimes, though, because, you know, like, he had that press conference, what, like 2 days ago, where he was discussing making moves, Erik Karlsson, Jared Cowan, how these guys were going to be fixtures within a couple years.
Weirkosh.
Yeah, Weirkosh, sorry. How he was referring to, like, young players who the team's going to be built around in the next, what, 3 years?
Yep.
So it's weird to see him give up players who maybe could augment them going forward from there and building towards that. But he's balanced the future with the present, and you can't really gauge whether or not that's a good or bad thing until the season's over. So,
and if our rebuilds only take a year, really.
Yeah.
Or rebounds, I guess. I guess this wasn't really ever a rebuild, was it? It was a rebound.
Well, if Andy Sutton and Anton Volchenkov leave this summer, that's $6 million bucks right there. That's one good player that you can bring in for two defensemen.
Mad money.
There you go. But anyways, any thoughts before we go?
Let's spend that mad money this summer. Just like to thank all of our listeners who called in today. Absolute pleasure having you on. There's no reason why you guys shouldn't be doing this more often.
So if you ever want to come in or give us a call, feel free. Don't hesitate to float us an email. But I thought it went well.
Oh, definitely. No complaints. Would do again.
Yeah, definitely. But thanks again for listening. Thanks for reading the website.
Stay off the West Coast. Stay another night.
one-way flip. Give me the one-way ticket. Oh yeah, get me out.